stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
And here we are. It's Friday night, August the 1st. Can you believe, Mike, that it's already the 1st of August?
It has amazed me.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit global chilly out there for the 1st of August.
I think we're going to have an early winter. It feels more like late September now.
It does. And maybe a hard winter again. Okay, we're here on Saturday night. This is the State Sovereignty Hour, one of four State Sovereignty Hours, since it's really a State Sovereignty 2 hours tonight and 2 hours tomorrow night. I'm Dave. That guy over there is Mike Slack. We'll be here again tomorrow night. Then the big election on Tuesday, Mike.
I'll be glad when this one's over. I have a new conspiracy theory. I think the left-wing liberals created Amendment 1 to cause divisiveness within the ranks of conservatives.
Well, they might have done that.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly has caused the divisiveness, no matter what its source. And we'll be getting into that a little bit tonight. In fact, in the next two nights, we're not going to cover all five tonight. In the next two nights, we will briefly review again all five. You folks are welcome, please, to call 347-677-1835 and get in on the conversation. 347-677-1835. We welcome all of your inputs. We'll listen quite politely to every one of you, and you'll all get your say. We're going to cover them all. We're not going to make this an Amendment 1 4-hour episode. Some of these other amendments are at least should get a mention, I think. So that's where we're going to go tonight and tomorrow night. And then next week, we'll recap. You know, Mike, I say this with a little bit of self-deprecation, I guess. This time 2 years ago, and you've mentioned the divisiveness, instead of talking about five ballot questions that would amend the Constitution of the state of Missouri, we were actually interviewing candidates and kind of ciphering out who was the real conservative, who was the real Tea Party person, and who was not. We spent very little time on that this year. I've spent quite a bit of time with Mike Moon because he's under direct attack from the party. But we've spent very little time on actually going race to race around the state, especially those races with Republican primaries, and trying to ferret out who's the good, who's the bad, and who's the ugly.
Well, you know, in my county, we don't even have any contested races on the Republican side in the primary. Other than, and I think this is very healthy, two of our precincts do have contested races for committee people.
Yes.
First time it's ever happened in Oregon County. And I know Howell County, where West Plains is, has a couple of contested committeeman races.
Well, that is healthy.
Same thing. And to me, that's very healthy. It shows more people are wanting to get involved.
Right. And that's
in fact,
the level of matter.
I'm going to do something this year that's legal in the state of Missouri since we're open primary that I've never, ever done before. There is one primary on the Democratic side where I do think it would make a difference with a couple of candidates. There's one person that I think would be a lot better than the other. So I'm considering taking a Democratic ballot for the first time in my life to vote for her since there is nothing on my side on the Republican ticket.
Is that in
now? I'm going to have to grit my teeth. I'm going to think of Nancy Pelosi, and it's just going to drive me crazy doing that. But
is that in a more local election there, or is it a state level election?
Local. It's one of the county office holders.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And really, what you'd call one of the minor races, but it's the only thing contested, the only thing where it would matter at all.
Right.
And in our area. I'm a committee person, and I'm the only one running, so I don't need to vote for myself. It's kind of automatic then. And that's the way it usually is with committees.
Right.
Usually one person signs up, and then they're in. So, but I really do like seeing competition for some of these races. And I have my preferences, so I'll keep my fingers crossed.
There you go. Those local races are very important, and that is in fact the whole gist of the state sovereignty issue. I mean, we are at the state level, and this is the wisdom of the founders before we got to the giant that the federal government has become, the power vacuum, was that government or those decisions that affect people's day-to-day lives should be made at as local a level as possible. And they came to the convention from states, and so in the natural course of events, they considered the state as the entity from which government should emanate, and not divide us up into 16,242 counties, but rather into state units. But you know, it is at the state level where government should happen. You have a real representative in Jefferson City, a person who represents a small enough group of people that you recognize him when you meet him in the grocery store. You recognize him when you see him on the street. He recognizes you when you meet at a meeting or at the car wash or at church or anywhere. And these are the kinds of people that represent you in Jefferson City. And more beautifully, you and three other people on two Saturday afternoons with a viable candidate behind you can actually change representation. I mean, we're talking 100 by 100 square block area that you need to cover. And so a concerned group of grassroots activists can actually affect things at the state level. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just thinking of the Blue Way last year. That was a federal issue, but concerned citizens acting together did change that.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, we had the help of our state and federal representatives both. But
right.
It was citizens who jumped up, raised, you know, holy heck, and all of a sudden everybody else paid attention. So,
well,
yeah,
and,
you're
and
right.
I think the Blue Ways thing is a perfect example of what can be done if we expand our minds enough to wrap ourselves around it. The federal government is a precarious time in history for the federal government. People are angry. People are teed off. States are starting to feel empowered, and I think Blue Ways shows us that short of states standing up to the federal government finally and saying, that's it, no more, you're done, they will back down. They don't look forward to that battle, and I think that those coming battles that we could see with Amendment 1 and Amendment, is it 7? Yeah, 7.
7, yeah.
Are going to be eventually won by the states. I think that this is a small piece of the pavement to pave the way to the Convention of the States. I look forward to the Convention of the States. I'm not at all in favor of strong-arming that convention into a box itself. Bring your favorite amendment. I don't care who you are. And let's see if three-fourths of the states agree with you. I think that when we go to that battle, when we put all the amendments together in a box, all the liberals' favorite amendments and all the conservatives' favorite amendments and all of the big government and little government people's favorite amendments in a box, and we send them out to the states for ratification, I think those amendments that say less federal government and more state government are the ones that are going to win.
I suspect you're correct on that.
At this point in history, and that's important to remember. It's important, in my mind, for us to strike and strike soon. You know, you look at everything that's happened to this country. The actual writing of the Constitution. The actual writing of the Constitution at the crumbling point of the cooperative states. Articles of Confederation were done for. They weren't going to last. The thing was coming apart. It was coming unglued. It was a perfect moment in history for the Constitution. It couldn't have happened much earlier. It certainly couldn't have happened any later. And then all of the damage that's been done to the Constitution since. You have the Progressive Era, all of those things. You have the Reconstructive Era, the Reconstruction, much damage done to the Constitution during that period. And all of those things, the Depression leading up to the Progressive Era and the New Deal, all of those things happened as a result of a specific point in history, and wouldn't have happened earlier and wouldn't have happened later. And I believe that our specific point in history is here. I believe that states are ready. They're ready now to say, look, monster, we're done with you. We own this thing. You don't. Get back in your box, and we'll call the shots.
Mm-hmm. Though you are reminding me of the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to have some guests tonight, Mike. Who's going to chime in?
You know, any minute now, we really should hear from Senator Mike Cunningham. He will be on his cell phone while he's driving. So he did mention that there might be times when he gets dropped out, but he'll call back. But Mike is my senator.
Mm-hmm.
He is from the Marshfield-Rogersville area. And he has a huge area that stretches from Marshfield-Rogersville, outskirts of Springfield, south to the Arkansas border, and then east to covering, let me see, I believe Shannon and Carter counties, or at least portions of them. He hits the area where Senator Doug Leibler's area picks up. And this is his first term as a senator, though he was in the House as a representative for, he was term limited out, however many it takes for that now. And I've known him since the campaign. I supported him. Interestingly enough, there was no Democratic opponent, and there was a hard-fought primary between three Republicans. And he won and then got in. And, you know, one thing about Mike is he and I don't always agree. There are some things, in fact, we've strongly disagreed on. But he has always been honest with me. He has never weaseled around the way, frankly, some politicians do. He just tells you straight out what he thinks. And I know at times his honesty has gotten him in trouble. No, but I like that. I'd rather have somebody I don't always agree with, but that is honest with me.
Oh, me too, yeah.
Anyway, Mike will be calling in, and you're surrounded by Mikes tonight. We'll also have Mike Evans around 7:15. Mike Evans is a West Plains resident, moved to Missouri from New Jersey years ago. And he had a talk show for about 3 years called America's Voice Now. I believe the show will be back in the future, but it's on hiatus at the moment. He had to take care of his business, and the station he was airing on changed ownership, changed formats. But Mike is a powerhouse of knowledge. He researches things very, very hard, knows a lot about everything. His articles have appeared in the New American magazine and on WorldNet Daily. And he has been a guest on probably 50 other talk shows. And on his show in the West Plains area, he was getting some top-tier guests on there at different times that, you know, I was just tickled to death to see him have. And he does a great job with them. Now, Mike Evans and I were at a meeting in West Plains last week with some friends concerning Amendment 1. And he posted a summary that I put up on Facebook and around of his views of that meeting. And then he also let me know today about a summary that I thought was very fair to both sides, written by a newspaper reporter from West Plains. And I put that up on the Facebook page for the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And I think that's worth a read to see what this reporter, who was trying to be objective and I think did a good job, saw, looking at both sides of that debate. So, highly recommend that. We should be joined by both of those guys just any time now.
And, good.
Mike Evans has a lot of opinions on all of the amendments, and Mike Cunningham could fill us in a little bit on how they, you know, how the legislature happened to come up with these amendments and how they passed them.
Right.
And, you know, a couple of things that surprised me in chatting with him.
And we may or may not, speaking of Mike, hear from Mike Moon. He's out on the campaign trail. I've told him that anytime he wants to call in this weekend, just to call in and give us an update on how it's going out there in the battle zone. So we may or may not hear from him.
Can you fill us in a little bit on that? I mean, Mike's got a lot of challenges from the traditional Republican Party. Is that correct? Or
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mike is, you may recall Mike Moon. There was a fellow named Don Rizicka who represented the district that includes Monette, Aurora, I'm getting old. What's the city down here in the southwest where the Veterans Hospital is?
Mount Vernon.
Mount Vernon, right. That area there, and a large rural area of smaller towns. And Rizicka was part of a Republican majority that was causing some problems for the governor 4 years ago. And the governor took and appointed three Republicans to various executive lower executive level positions. Rizicka accepted a position in the Department of Corrections, and there was a special election as a result of that. Mike Moon came out of that election. This term, Mike did a lot of great things. He sponsored anti-Common Core legislation. He sponsored the both the resolution calling for a convention of the states and the bill that defined how you would choose delegates to the convention of the states. He saw those things through committee. And one of the other things he did was he filed one of three articles of impeachment against the governor. And we spent quite a bit of time here on those articles of impeachment. If you folks are regular listeners, you'll recall that I thought that the one that Mike filed was the only one that really had some legs to it, that was not political in some way, that just was basically a, here's the Constitution, Governor, you've broken the rules, and we're going to chastise you for that. But specifically, Mike's article of impeachment had to do with the fact that there were from a resignation, from an appointment, from a senator who a representative who ran for the state house with every intention of resigning the moment she got there to take another job, and with another representative who accepted a higher calling. Five vacancies, and the governor has a constitutional obligation to call a special election without delay to fill those seats. Well, as a result of him not doing so, we have 750,000 Missourians who had no representation for the entire term, in, well, two districts for the entire term, in Jefferson City. So a good number of Missourians who were being taxed without any representation, who were being governed without any representation, and Mike said that's clearly impeachable. The governor, of course, mustered all of his forces together, and the article of impeachment didn't even see a committee until the last 3 weeks of the session, when grassroots pressure finally forced Tim Jones to refer it to the Judiciary Committee rather than the General Laws Committee. Now, you may ask why the Judiciary Committee rather than General Laws, where most of these bills land. Well, the answer is Stephen Cox, who is chairman of the Judiciary Committee. They did have a hearing in the Judiciary Committee, and then Cox decided single-handedly, without even a committee vote, that they were just going to go ahead and kill this article of impeachment and not forward it to the House. He isn't running for re-election, but he is running for election in, of all places, if you can imagine, with the integrity that he has, a circuit judgeship up in Sedalia. Now, we're fighting hard not only to get Mike elected, but to get Stanley Cox defeated. So that's Mike Moon in a nutshell. Now, because of this fight that he put up, the party has mounted a opponent for him in the primary, and that opponent has some name recognition. That name is Ruzicka. So here we are in an open primary state, and the Republicans are out cleaning out the union halls and knocking on Democratic doors in an effort to unseat a sitting representative. Now, I'm optimistic. I think there's going to be a heavy turnout of conservatives in Mike's district. I'm going down myself tomorrow to help knock on doors and bring this thing home, I hope. I do my little bitty part to bring this thing home. Mike and the good folks that have been with him have been out there every Friday and Saturday. Mike's been nightly, well, you know what the campaign trail's like. Mike's been out there seeing the meetings and shaking the hands. The people in Mike's district are well aware of what he's done for them, and they're well aware that for Mike Moon, a legislator isn't just a representative of the people during the 5.5 months that he's in Jefferson City. He's out there working hard every day now for them, beating back DNR, beating back Common Core in his district, beating back the government and the power that would get the people. We've lost Mike for a moment, so we're going to carry on here. It's 347-677-1835. We're going to have some amendment talk when we come back. We've been promised Mike Cunningham and Mike Evans. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get right into the first of the five amendments.
To call Clyde, come springtime, so let me hear you say,
that can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the Doubletree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. PreppersandPatriots.net.
We're back. Mike Slack is back with us. He's gone to make some phone calls and see about our guests, one of which arrived in his absence. Mike Evans, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, how are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. Mike was just talking about you. He's filled everybody in on who you are, so you might not want to go back and listen to the podcast because
all the bad stuff was lies and all the good stuff was truth, right?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So
I said such nice things about both mics. I'm expecting checks later.
There you go. All right. So. I'll leave it to you two to get started.
Well Mike, why don't you run through the five amendments that are up here and just give us a summary opinion of your view on each of them, if you wouldn't mind. We all seem to have different ideas. And, you know, it might not hurt. I told folks about the meeting we went to in West Plains and that I had posted the summary, both the one you wrote and the one the reporter from the Quill in West Plains wrote. And I think both were very good summaries.
I think the guy from the Quill did a very nice job in terms of, you know, his balance on it, and I saw it as very well written. And not just because he quoted you or me or anybody else, just because I think he did a fairly good job of putting forth what the meeting basically held. Here's my whole issue with this Amendment 1. There's really two primary problems. One, the argument I heard over and over and over and over again is that this is the best we could get. And my response to that is, with all due respect, if that's the best that we can expect from our legislature, then they failed us. Period. End of argument. If the best that we could get is some half-baked bill that only addresses part of the problem and really misses the real true core of the problem and yet leaves loopholes big enough for you to drive the city of Kansas City through sideways, then I've got a problem with that. The second issue is that they are consistently painting this situation as if this is a good start. Well, with all due respect, you don't start with a constitutional amendment. You finish with a constitutional amendment. This should have been addressed through legislative process, first and foremost, so that if they found that there were problems with the law, if we found that there was some kind of a poison pill that we didn't really know about, where there was really a whole lot of corporate skullduggery going on in the background, we could have then gone to the legislature, or could go to the legislature and say, fix it or repeal it. But once it's a constitutional amendment, now you need another constitutional amendment to amend the last amendment.
I don't have a problem with that.
You don't build the house and then decide to add a basement later.
Just to my question for a second, okay? You want to start with legislation. Now this is, let's just assume for a second that this bill got its infancy, became an embryo during the puppy mill thing.
Right, in 2010.
Okay, let's just assume that that's a fact. Now, what kind of legislation do you write to circumvent the initiative process? Or do you just set up a legislature that routinely, and it's a matter of habit, goes back and undoes citizen initiatives?
Well, what they really should have done was simplify, first of all, by putting a caveat at the end that it's subject to the duly authorized powers under Article 6. Basically, they opened up the door for a 300-page rewrite of every definition and every issue in Article 6, which is hundreds of pages long. So anytime they want to modify the constitutional amendment, all the legislature has to do is modify Article 6. How absurd was that?
No, wait a second, Mike. The legislature can no more modify Article 6 than it can modify Article 1, Section 23.
Oh,
the legislature
can't
modify
the Constitution. It's a lot easier for them. I disagree. It's a lot easier for them to modify Article 6 and put that on the ballot with language that's tricky and really doesn't quite point out what the real issue is than it is for them to go in and modify an amendment that was added this year.
Okay.
In other words, if they want to amend the language in Article 6 to redefine family farmer, corporate farmer, rules surrounding how counties or the state itself can modify this, what the DNR's role is in all of the farming issues, they can simply go in there and put forth a second constitutional amendment, and basically it'll slide right up underneath the radar because nobody will recognize that what it really affects is the Right to Farm Bill, which was passed the year before.
How will they fit DNR into Article 6?
Well, DNR is just one of the concerns about who has rights and regulatory power over the – a lot of things are addressed in Article 6. Have you ever looked at Article 6?
I have, and DNR ain't one of the things addressed in Article 6.
No, but DNR already carries enormous power. You see, here's the difference. When you've got DNR as a policymaker And for one thing, DNR can pass policy that doesn't even require a constitutional amendment. But suppose that they made DNR added into Article 6. Nobody would think, well, wait a minute, that's going to affect the right to farm bill.
Wait a minute. Before they incorporated DNR into Article 6, do you not think we'd have this same discussion? I mean, do you not think we'd be here?
Most people don't even know what right to farm is, and we're 5 days away from it.
Well, most people aren't going to vote.
Even worse.
And one thing I'd point out, guys, we have five amendments, and we don't want to spend all night on Amendment 1. But Mike Cunningham is there, too.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of like to get an idea of what the legislature had in mind when they created each of the five amendments. Mike, could you fill us in a little bit on Amendment 1, and then we'll move to the others? Mike Cunningham.
I think at first I didn't catch Mike when I answered his call. He may be fading in and out. You say he's on the road and he's on the phone. Mike Cunningham, if you can hear us, as soon as you hit a point where you can talk, you just jump in, okay?
Yeah, go ahead and interrupt. It shows he's on there on the board.
And he definitely is. He's on live. But okay. I think maybe he's just not able to be communicating at this time.
We'll find that out a little bit later.
I hope he's not texting and driving. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with allowing the exception to those powers. I don't have a problem with the city of Springfield telling me I can or cannot raise beehives in my backyard. I would disagree
with that. I mean, I don't, that's like saying you could tell that the city of Springfield can tell people you can't have a few chickens to take care of your own family's needs with a few eggs.
Exactly.
Who's government to tell you that you can't have a few chickens in your yard?
Who's government to tell me that I can't raise three tigers in my backyard?
Tigers are a danger to the community. Half a dozen chickens are a completely different scenario.
I'm going to tell you right now, more people in Missouri have died of bees than tigers.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but tigers are not a species that we would find roaming the streets. They're not house cats. You know, I mean, that's an implausible argument. And with all due respect, it's a false argument that's based on emotion. This isn't an emotional issue. If I want to live in Springfield, there should be nothing that prohibits me from having a half a dozen chickens in my backyard as long as they're not, I mean, I'm not creating a problem with those chickens, i.e. an eyesore in the community, or I've got a rooster that's waking up all my neighbors.
Okay, so basically,
and even if that is the case, then the person that should have the right to mitigate that down. Listen, we had chickens raised in New York City for crying out loud until the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly
they're persona non grata in Springfield.
Don't get me wrong. I'm in favor of chickens. I'm in favor of bees. I want two beehives in my backyard, but I'm also in favor of the citizens of the city of Springfield being able to make the rules that govern the city of Springfield.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that to a point. But bear in mind anytime you have a democracy where the majority can overrule the rights of the individual, that leads to problems in the simple sense. And I'm not talking about, you know, things like tigers. There's an inherent danger to a tiger that you don't have with chickens. But any time you can have the majority say, 51% of the people say that the other 49% cannot have a chicken, that's a problem. You know, that's why we have this Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, that basically said and cut in stone, there are certain things that not even the democratic model can affect. And those are the individual rights to life, liberty, ownership of property, the benefit of your labor, the pursuit of your happiness as you perceive it to be. That's why we have the first 10 amendments that are cut in stone.
Okay, and this is where we have to draw the line right here. The first 10 amendments and the Constitution as a whole have no bearing on what the city of Springfield or the state of Missouri can do. They are limitations and restrictions on the federal government and on the federal power. All other
powers. But the principle is the same, Dave.
Which is why the state of Missouri has a Bill of Rights in our Constitution. An entire section of the Constitution that limits the scope of the federal government, that says, or that limits the scope of the state government, and even of the local governments. Now,
but all constitutional documents are meant to be binding on government. Thomas Jefferson said that the premise behind the Constitution was that we couldn't trust men's better judgment or their ethics or their morals. So what we should do is bind men down from mischief with the chains of a Constitution. And whether that's a state constitution or a federal constitution, the principle adheres. Governments are restricted by constitutions, not citizens.
Correct. Now,
well, this
I don't have a problem with a democracy in the block where I live or in the school district where I live. I don't have a problem really with even a democratic rule within the confines of the charter that we the people of Springfield accept within the city. The bigger you get the government, the more dangerous a democracy becomes. Yes, that's true. But I don't have any
democracy.
Go ahead, Mike.
Do not even like using the word democracy, nor did Thomas Jefferson like using it, or Hamilton or Adams. We don't have a democracy.
No.
A democracy
is what
ancient Athens had. People voted that Socrates should commit suicide, and he had to. You know, so I hate to hear people talk about the American democracy. We don't have one.
Mike Cunningham,
Dave, what I think you're saying is that you could have...
Mike Cunningham, are you here?
I'm on here if you can hear me.
All right. I can hear you now, Mike.
Okay.
Now, what we were actually starting with Amendment 1, and what Mike had asked of you is kind of give us a briefing of what the chatter, what the feeling was in the House when they talked about this, when they passed this, when they decided that this was a good thing.
In the Senate, Mike was in the Senate, but
in the Senate,
yeah.
Okay. Actually, the amendment started this about Monsanto starting and such or like that. That's not true. That was started by a representative, Tom Lerner, and Tom was a small farmer about 40 miles outside Jeff City. He was a state rep that I served with him for 6 years. Great guy. And he was on his tractor one night and then wanting to protect his farm, wanting to protect his family, seeing what was happening. And I think that was before Prop B. That he's the one that came up with that and introduced it in the legislation. So that was the initial start of it. What we were thinking, we were looking at ways of protecting Missouri's way of life, Missouri's farming, and Missouri's way of life. And the reason why it goes back to Article 6, Missouri Constitution, because that deals with local control.
Right. Now, it seems that some people have a problem with that, though. With the idea that there should be any local control. Some people seem to think that a person should just be able to plant or raise anything short of, excuse me, Mike, I'm sorry. Those people believe that they should draw the line as to what's dangerous and what's not dangerous, and I shouldn't draw the line, or the city council shouldn't draw the line. Tigers, maybe not. Bees, maybe so. Hippopotamuses, maybe not. Giraffes, maybe so. But
it needs to be handled at the local level.
Okay.
And that's actually the basis of it, and I truly believe that. If it isn't handled at the local level, then it goes to state level. And if we don't take care of the state level, then it goes to federal level and just gets bigger and bigger. So I'm a big believer in local control.
Mike?
And if you don't like the local law, then you're in a position then to run against the person doing it and have some control over that. Any step that goes up, government just gets bigger, and we lose more and more control.
Or change it through a local initiative. Mike Evans, come back.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
With the local control issue? I have no problem with local control. In fact, I think, you know, that government, which is smallest and most local to us, is the best.
Okay.
But in this instance, the real issue and the challenge that I have with this is that, one, it leaves massive loopholes that are going to have to be dealt with in a legal courtroom format. Because when you have a scenario with a bill like this, you're going to have an enormous amount of litigation associated with it. That means family farmers are going to be the ones who are going to have to actually pay to litigate this. They're going to have to hire the attorney.
That's fine. I'm going, me the family farmer, Mike, though, my argument would be, me the family farmer, I'm going to have to litigate that anyway when DNR comes down and tries to tell me I can't collect rainwater in a rain barrel on my property. I now have this on my side.
I would beg to differ. There's actually a difference because you can litigate it in the courts against the DNR, but you can't litigate with the DNR without going through an administrative ruling, which basically means you don't have an opportunity for a jury trial. When you go before an administrative agency, you don't have the right to a jury trial.
Is Mike Cunningham, is DNR exempt from me suing them?
I'm not sure if he's still there.
I was passing State Patrolman. I want to put my phone down while I did so.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. What was the question, or what was?
Is DNR exempt from being sued if they were doing something a farmer didn't like? Can the farmer sue DNR?
If DNR comes down here and tells me, well, forget the suit, Mike Evans. If DNR comes down here and tells me that I can't collect rainwater in a barrel, in 50 barrels, to water my soybeans, my non-Roundup Ready soybeans, then I say no. There's going to be some litigation. I say I'm going to collect water anyway. There's going to be some litigation. There's going to be litigation with or without this, and I want this on my side when that litigation comes, Mike.
Well, I'm not saying that my contention has always been, and I will stand by it, that it's not the content of this law that's bad. It's that it doesn't go far enough. The simple truth is, the way that this thing should have been written, where instead of where it says subject to Article 6, it should have just said shall not be infringed. The right of farmers and ranchers to operate their land and function as farmers and ranchers shall not be infringed. Period.
So now there is no local control. Now I can dump whatever I want into the creek that runs into my neighbor's
place.
No, you can't.
That's not a function of farming.
Now I can raise. Okay, now I can breed tigers.
No, you can't. That's not farming. Show me where a tiger is listed as livestock.
We're going to have a definition of farming.
Okay, so...
Well, the farming is already defined. Farming is already defined.
In fact,
Mike, if you pull up that... I don't have it in front of me, but if you pull up that article from the Quill, the guy that was there from the state legislature read the definition of farming. And it doesn't talk about tigers or anything like that. Come on.
This isn't going to help the puppy breeders at all. For everything that's said and done, this isn't going to help the puppy breeders.
I don't know whether it helps or hurts the puppy breeders, and I don't think that's the real focus of this, because the vast majority of Missourians who are farmers are not puppy breeders. We're talking about people who are going to be, who are being impacted from their ability to grow crops and have livestock.
Okay.
Puppies are not livestock. No one construes, not even the HSUS, as misguided and misled as they are, construe pigs and goats and sheep and cows to be and horses to be pets.
Okay, Mike Cunningham.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello, Mike. Yeah, we're here. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. Would this amendment, if in place, have stopped Prop B cold?
Yes. It's my understanding from talking to legal people, the lawyers, Senate research staff, yes, it would have.
Because puppy breeders are farmers and ranchers?
I don't know about farmers and ranchers, but the way it was described, I was told that, yes, it would stop it. And what it's trying to do is stop what's happening in California. You know, with the caged chickens and et cetera like that,
yeah.
Basically.
I get it. Yeah,
you know, that's what it's designed for.
Yeah, and the brood sows and things like that. Sure, I get all that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mike Evans.
Yes, sir.
I have 2 acres in Springfield, Missouri. How many cows can I have on it?
You probably shouldn't have more than one cow on it. Maybe no cows, because two acres is really not enough to support two cows or even one cow.
What if I want five?
I was just
going to
say, if you have two acres,
I
can buy a lot of hay.
What if I want five? I can buy hay.
Well, I mean, if you want to have a cow and you make sure that your property is properly fenced and it doesn't affect your neighbors, and I don't see any reason why you shouldn't have a cow. I mean, if you want to have a cow and you want to let it eat your grass, as long as you're feeding it properly, as long as you're willing to subsidize it, because you're definitely not raising a cow on 2 acres, minus the how many square feet for the house and the garage and whatever else you've got on the property, I really don't see a problem with that.
So
what's the harm in it?
Well,
one cow's not going to generate enough waste to bother your neighbor.
I want five.
Nobody's gonna smell it.
I want to milk them every day. I'll build little stanchions for them to stand in. I'm not going to break any federal laws. I'm going to take good care of my cows and feed them. I like the smell of cow manure. I like the sound of cows at sunrise. I want 5 cows on my 2 acres. What's to stop me?
Nothing.
And I personally would not mind the cows. The city of Springfield disagreed, and that's why I moved 2 hours south of Springfield.
I want roosters.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Evans, I want roosters.
Well, the only problem with roosters is a noise issue. And there are city noise ordinances that would be able to utilize a noise ordinance. Where they would be able to utilize a noise ordinance, not an anti-farming ordinance.
Well, yeah. Okay, all right.
I mean, I'm responding to you. These are arguments you're putting forth which really don't have a basis in reality. And I'm giving you a rational, responsible answer that there is a way around that. It's called the city noise ordinance, disturbing the peace.
Mike, does a cow disturb some people's peace?
I'm sorry?
Does a cow disturb some people's peace? Whenever you go to wean calves and they bawl all night?
Well, you're assuming that the person's going to have more than one. But, you know, to answer your position, I would use the same argument for that as I did for the roosters. There's a noise ordinance. I've got people who live in my neighborhood that have 5 or 6 dogs that bark endlessly. All you've got to do is walk out of the house and they go off barking like to raise the dead. I mean, that's more disturbing to me than a cow. That's more disturbing to me than a rooster. I don't want to have to have 5 dogs barking like insane animals at me because I go out on my back porch.
Yeah. And that's why we need local control to keep the state out of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even disagreeing with local control.
Yeah.
My point is,
and that's what
that when
that's
you,
what Article 6 deals with, though, Mike.
No, Article 6 deals with a lot more than local control. Because, you see, when you make it subject to Article 6, it's not exclusively just local control in terms of the city. It's city, it's county, it's everything else. And
well, it's not everything else, Mike. It's city and county.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
okay.
It depends on the political makeup of that given city. As an example, West Plains, only just became a charter city, 6 months ago, as an example.
Right.
Not even 4 or 5 months ago. And so, it's not as cut and dried as all of that. But be that as it may, those cities already have an ordinance that has in place that says you cannot disturb the peace by an animal that makes an enormous, endless noise, incessant noise. I don't see a reason why you can't use those ordinances.
Would that ordinance fall to this?
Will that ordinance fall to what? I lost
to this. Well, I mean, to your amendment. Would that ordinance fall to your amendment?
I mean,
your amendment takes away all local control, says that my right to farm pigs can't be infringed, period.
Well, that's not entirely true, because if you go by government's definition of not infringed, look at how many infringements are on your Second Amendment rights. Look at how many infringements are on your Fourth Amendment rights. Look at how many infringements are on your First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
So you can't say that by saying shall not be infringed means that government doesn't have the ability to say that one aspect of something that is either dangerous or what have you cannot be limited by government in some fashion. I mean, you've got a limit on your Second Amendment right to own a machine gun merely because the state or the federal government says that those could be dangerous.
Okay.
Your First Amendment right is limited in certain aspects. Your Fourth Amendment right is limited. In fact, we've got it to the point where the NSA is openly telling people we can do whatever we want, listen and read all your email, listen to everything that you talk about on the telephone, and there's not a doggone thing you can do about it. Not a limitation on your Fourth Amendment right.
So, I guess I'm missing where we're going with this. I'm saying that if
you have the words "shall not be infringed" attached to the back end of this, it doesn't mean that there are not regulations which can affect those rights.
It's not an absolute law. Just like the first, the First Amendment, freedom of speech is not an absolute law. You can't slander, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Right. But
it is not an absolute law. Should this be passed?
So that I think the point, the entire point of that is that you have an opportunity to have the ability to run and operate a family farm. I've heard people who, I wrote an article about it the other day, and I heard people comment back to me, well, wait a minute, an LLC could be a family farm too, because a lot of individual small family farmers operate as an LLC. But, there are already definitions as to what quantifies a small business versus, a large business, and that's based on production and revenue and so forth and so on. There are ways to resolve that so that if you don't want to use the word family farm because you think that would limit the LLCs, okay. You can simply define what qualifies as a family farm. A family-operated farm that operates below a certain revenue stream level or whatever you want. I mean, there's all different variations of that. And you want to know something? I bet you're going to see this law get litigated within the first 6 to 8 months that it's in place.
Oh, absolutely.
Guess who's going to have to pay the litigation fees to protect and defend themselves against
that
whomever?
That's their attorney general should do a lot of that, Mike.
Cunningham, could you say that again?
The attorney general should defend a lot of that.
Well, the attorney general, if that's the case, then the attorney general should defend us on our gun rights, and they don't do that.
They will after Amendment 7 passes.
And when we get a new attorney general.
Yes, and it depends on, which attorney general is in power. Eric Holder is supposed to defend us on a federal level, and look at how that's going. You can't necessarily say that.
Guys, I think one thing I'd point out is Amendment 1 is very controversial, very divisive among liberty-minded conservatives. We got a lot for, a lot against, and we can't spend the whole night on that. I'd like to move on to MoDOT, that amendment.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on to MoDOT.
If I can say one thing to wrap this up, I'm all for family farmers, and I'm all for the protection of family farmers. I just don't think that this bill was well written. Let's put it that way. And it could have been, they could have done a better job of getting better language in there that would have done more to protect the, you know, to protect the farmers that it's supposed to be defending and protecting.
Okay. Looks like we lost
Hello?
Mike for a second, but he's coming back. Mike Cunningham. Mike, are you there? Mike Cunningham, can you hear us? Well, the hazards of traveling.
Yeah, we might have lost Mike Cunningham, but why don't you introduce Amendment 2, Mike, and then we'll comment on it, and then when Mike comes back on, he can jump into the fray.
Sure. Dave, do you have it in front of you, the MoDOT bill?
Okay.
Dave, do you have the MoDOT bill in front of you?
I do have the MoDOT bill in front of me. That's what are we asking about it? I'm sorry, I was off taking Mike Cunningham's callback.
Oh, well, and if we've got Mike back, if you could briefly tell us what the MoDOT amendment covers, and then before we lose Mike again, get an idea of what the legislature had in mind with this. And
okay,
I mean, I really
all,
like knowing kind of what the behind-the-scenes thought process was. And
okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we
yeah.
hear you. Just
Hello?
Go.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I thought that Highway Patrolman came back and found you on your cell phone.
Okay, not yet.
Go ahead, Mike.
The thought process was that behind MoDOT is behind on money. They, according to their estimates, I'm not saying that just you, people have to use their own judgment whether they want to vote for it or don't. But the facts are MoDOT is short on money, are getting better mileage, et cetera, like that. So therefore, they feel that their maintenance is going to run up at like, I think $475 million, and they're only going to generate $325 million. So there's a huge deficit there. And part of that problem is going to be they're not going to have enough money to match the federal funds for the drawdown of the federal money. So it's going to create quite a problem if we do not do something. Now, is this the right answer? I don't know. It does not affect food. It does not affect prescription drugs, utilities, or rent. It should not be on there on the state level. So it that's part of it. Some people wanted a penny. Some people wanted less. We settled at 3/4% 10-year. Once a project, that final project on the list right now, once it is, now it's been accepted by the commission, it cannot be changed. So if a construction project is on there, it will be constructed if this passes. If it's not on there, it will not be. Nothing will be juggled around. It won't take away money from this, money from that. Now, one of the facts, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've been told that there's 80%, there's a lot of concern about a lot of it going to St. Louis, a lot of it going to I-70. I'm told that 80% of Missouri's population lives within 20 miles either direction of I-70. So that's one reason why a lot of money would go up there, and it is the most heavily traveled road, and it does need lots of repair. They're predicting it'll be bumper to bumper within the next 10 years, all the way from Kansas City to St. Louis. So that's the general concern as to why we put it out there. And it's up to people now to vote. If you like it, fine, vote for it. If you don't, vote for it. You know,
Mike Evans, 1 minute.
Anytime government's looking for more money, I'm preferably against, I'm generally against it.
Yes, me too.
I think government, for the most part, has shown us a complete and total lack of responsibility in terms of what they use it for. There's no accountability. Once those funds are generated, they never disappear off the list. And whether even when the problem is fixed, they keep collecting the money, and they squander it over and over and over again. So I vote no.
All right, there is a 10-year sunset on that.
Until they extend
it. And like I say, these cannot be changed. Pardon me?
They'll extend it. You know, 9 years from now, we'll be having this conversation again about how desperate they are and how they need to extend it.
I didn't bring for you. I just put it out for the most democratic way we can do it is for people to vote for it or vote against it, you know, as
Mike,
an individual. And that's why it's put out there.
Mike,
yeah,
why?
Dave, you had a fascinating idea last week. Could you summarize it really quick, your idea?
I'm going to vote against it, and I'm going to vote against it on the general principle of the way MoDOT works. MoDOT has wasted, Mike, enormous sums of money on signs that tell us MoDOT cares. No one's going to argue that MoDOT has squandered the money we've given them to a great degree. Millions of dollars, probably as many millions in the last 5 years as they're going to come up short. I prefer, and I'm going to stand as a no on anything MoDOT asks for until such time as I can find a legislator who will sponsor for us a constitutional amendment to get MoDOT back into the appropriations process. No executive agency deserves nor should ever have taxpayer money channeled to them in and around the legislative process. I mean, it is so ripe for waste.
In other words, Dave wants them to have adult supervision, and he wants the legislature to be the adults. Is that fair?
And I don't disagree with that, but back when it was that way, it got awfully political, and that they tried to take politics out of it.
Well,
I said tried. I didn't say they did it completely. And some of the signs, I question, like the little markers on I-44, when I was a state rep, I questioned those. I thought it was a complete waste of money. And it is, and that doesn't justify it, but it was a federal program. It was not, I was told, it was a federal program, not state gas tax money doing so. And that's true with a lot of that. And I don't agree with that, but they felt it was their duty because there's things out there, and they could go to the feds and get this grant to do it. And that's what they told me whenever I questioned the road market.
I'll guarantee you, Mike. I'll guarantee you, Mike. Every one of those federal dollars was matched by us. Now.
Oh yeah, one way or another, I agree.
Yeah,
one way or another.
Yeah. So to say, well, the federal government did this or the federal government did that. I'll guarantee you that the federal government paid about half or maybe a little bit more of the signs that say MoDOT cares. But we pay the other half. We pay the other half with money. With money that they're now coming back to us.
We also paid the other half through federal taxes on revenue, or federal gas taxes and fuel taxation and all the rest. So let's not fool ourselves into thinking that we didn't pay for all of it.
I agree with you 100%.
There's certain people out there that think that if we send it to D.C., we need to get it back.
And I don't have a problem, Mike Cunningham, with MoDOT being funded from user taxes. I don't have a problem with MoDOT's money being restricted to the gas tax, which I would take. I mean, if they're having problems with the user tax because people are burning less gasoline now and because cars are getting better mileage now, why don't they just change it from a per gallon tax to a percent tax to a gasoline sales tax, so that, you know, people might be buying less gallons, but they're spending more money now. That's for darn sure.
The problem with that is if cars continue to get better gas mileage, then that is a restricted fund, and their funds are going to go down.
Well,
yeah, but wait a second, gentlemen. With all due respect, the argument against that is that there are more cars now than ever on the road. Fuel-wise, we're burning more fuel now than we're burning as much fuel now as we did with the gas guzzlers of the 80s and 90s.
That's not true, Mike. Just because there are that many
more cars on the road.
That's not true, Mike. I actually looked this figure up, and we have actually sold less gallons of fuel in the state of Missouri last year than at any time in the past 5 years, with the high point being 5 years ago.
But wait a second. I would submit to you that that is not based on the fact that cars are getting better mileage. I would submit to you that most of America is too broke to fill the tank.
Well, that Well, I'm not saying
that.
$3.25 to $4 a gallon, most Americans have not cut back on their gas mileage because they're driving more efficient cars. They're cutting back on their gas mileage because they can't afford to go to the beach anymore.
You're right, Mike. You're right, yeah. Mike Evans. Absolutely correct.
There's
but that doesn't change.
That,
the, it doesn't change the fact that we've sold less gallons, and since the use tax is a cent per gallon, MoDOT's money has actually decreased rather than increased.
With costs going up.
Right. Now,
you know, asphalt, concrete, et cetera, like that.
Now, that doesn't change the fact, Mike Cunningham, that MoDOT is an incredible waster of money. They're an incredible abuser of the power that they have of direct compensation, and I don't have a problem with MoDOT getting all of the gas tax, getting all of the road use tax, getting all of the sales tax from vehicle sales. I don't have a problem with that, but that money needs to go through an appropriation. It needs to be exactly like what you're proposing with this amendment for every dime they collect, and that is you give us the projects you need funded, and we'll say there's enough money to fund these this year or not.
Well,
would you be willing to consider an amendment that would change the source of funding for MoDOT, taking a look at that for the next session?
I could look at it, but I don't want to get politics back into it. And then you get into it, and that can happen with the commission. But the commission,
well,
I think we're looking at a different commission in the last 10 years, and it was started by Governor Holden whenever he took a lot of the politics out of it. And so I think we're looking at a different commission than we were 10 years ago. I think there's more responsible people. So, you know, okay. If you don't want to see... You vote for my overpass, and I'll vote for yours, and screw the rest of you. You don't want to see that. And I'm not saying that can't happen with the commission now, but I think it's a little bit more of an open process. And I don't know. That's something to look at, but I just don't. I like the way it operates, and just expand politics out of it. If we don't, Kansas City and St. Louis is gonna, and I-70, all that. That's when we really get taken.
Oklahoma has turnpikes with people paying a fee to use the highways. Have we ever considered that?
Well, no, because one, it's hard on commerce, extremely hard. I have a friend of mine has a concrete plant, buys everything out of Kansas instead of Oklahoma because it's all, I think he told me $7,000 a year in tolls. And then getting off of the toll roads, et cetera, like that. And the public does not like toll roads. They don't want them. And so I think that, and basically, I don't care, you know, I agree that they need more money. Is there a perfect source? No. But add toll roads, it's going to get passed on to the consumer. At, you know, up diesel fuel, it's going to be passed on to the consumer. And I've seen that before when I had a supermarket, that, you know, fuel went up 10 cents a gallon. Great, you know, wholesaler, it's a great price and 3 cents, I hope Greg is running here, you know, have a put on blows, no way can I do it, just make the same, you know, we have 3 cents.
We're losing you, Mike.
Hang on, you're probably in a dip.
I would posit, gentlemen, that one of the other areas that we could do, okay, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, there's no free lunch. It's going to be passed on. So if you raise diesel fuel, your price is going to go up, the grocery store is going to go up on all freight, et cetera, and be hard on time. So, there's no perfect place to get it. And, you know, it's just perfect. But, you know, that's up to the individual. They came up with a pretty decent bill. If people don't like it, then they'll go back and try something else. Or
okay, Mike's fading out a little bit. Mike's fading out a little bit. Mike Evans and Mike Slack, take this for a minute.
Mike Evans, why don't you finish this one up, and then we'll move on to the next amendment.
Sure. I would like to see a level of accountability across the board for government that you know, MoDOT should be one of the target agencies to become the first. To when money is set aside for a project, it has to go into a specific fund for that project and can't be used for anything else. This idea of general funding, where literally tens of billions, maybe in some cases, depending upon the agency, hundreds of billions of dollars is at their disposal. And there's no rules to what they can spend it on or how it can be spent, that it has to actually make it to the project it was voted in for. That kind of thing is just, that is a corruption developer. It's a breeder of corruption. And I think to Dave's point, you know, MoDOT is one of the most egregious abusers of money that we have in the state. And they have shown us time and time and time again that they cannot and or will not deal with us in an ethical, moral, and faithful manner. I wouldn't give them a red nickel. I'd make them cut the money from something else, namely the overglut of employees and their travel and all the rest of that.
Okay. We have an amendment to set up a lottery system that would benefit veterans projects. Mike Cunningham, are you back with us?
Yes.
Okay. Mike, you were telling me that the VFW had actually requested this, lobbied for it. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I understand correctly?
VFW, American Legion, actually.
Okay. And what was the intent behind?
The intent is to raise more money for the veterans' home. The veterans used to get all of the entrance fees going into the gambling boats, and then they had excess of funds, and then there's kind of some swapping done around before I was there, 10 years or so before, that gave some of it to, First Steps or one of the children's programs. I can't remember which one it was now. Good. And so they gave up some of that, and now they're hurting for money, so they're looking at ways to raise funds. And so this was a proposal that a representative came up with, and they came and talked to me about sharing it. And I decided not to do so. Nothing is said if I am a veteran. So I want to come back to the way it scared me. I need for the veterans of Missouri to rely on lottery by gambling money for their charitable. And also, I don't think it's going to raise the revenue.
You're breaking up a little, but I caught that you didn't think it would raise the amount of revenue that that they are wanting. It sounds to me like they may have a legitimate need for more funds. I don't care for the idea of a lottery myself for several reasons. One is, though we do have a lottery, I don't really like the idea of government being involved in gambling. I have no moral objection to individuals gambling if they wish. I just don't like the idea of government being involved in it. The other is, I remember the original lottery they passed in Missouri, which was they told us to help the schools.
Right.
And we found out afterwards that they were reducing the amount of money for schools from the general fund by the amount the lottery raised, so it really didn't go.
Game.
Pardon me?
It was a shell game.
Yeah, shell game. And I guess, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And most folks I've talked to feel that way. They won't vote for another lottery because they remember being lied to on the first one. So, you know, my view from what you've said is we need to come up with another way to raise funds for these veterans projects.
Yes, there needs to be a dedicated fund for them every year that unquestionably goes to veterans.
And does that cover the state veterans cemeteries also, or just the veterans homes?
I'm not sure, Mike. I think it's just veterans homes.
Okay. I'd wondered where the funding came from for the... and I apologize for my dogs in the background if you can hear them.
And the other question...
One of those
guys
they won't allow in Springfield, too many dogs.
The question that I would have is, now, if we establish this lottery fund for the veterans and it catches on, you know, okay, the government's been after us for years and years and years to drive less and for years and years and years to get better mileage cars, and now we're suddenly paying the price by having MoDOT come back to us and say, oh, our funding is going down while the costs are going up. Well, if we establish a veterans lottery fund and it becomes a good seller because people love veterans, how long till the education department is back saying, hey, look, you've cut into our funding?
Probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
It won't take long, and that's the reason why some educational groups are now coming out against it. I was surprised that they held off this long.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I always like to say with the lottery that it's a voluntary tax on the mathematically challenged. And it tends to be the folks who could least afford it that buy it.
Well, and that, for that matter, they get marketed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
I think it's a temporary fix for a permanent problem.
One problem that you have with the marketing aspect of the lottery is that they become running like the world's worst charities, where they spend a vast amount of money advertising and marketing it.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is that money that the state is supposed to be getting to go towards whatever the project is essentially targeted to never actually gets. It's like, you know, UNICEF, where 10% of the money actually gets to some starving kid, but the CEO's making $600 million a year, $6 million a year.
I spent a good number of years managing stores for the leading convenience store chain in Southwest Missouri, and I'm going to tell you, three times a year we were treated to the state lottery's box in Royal Stadium and Cardinal Stadium.
Right. Now, why does the state lottery have a box at a stadium?
Thank you very much.
And it's only one out of how many stadiums exist in the state, by the way?
Thank you very much, yeah.
You know, the other problem with lotteries is that they create a whole other layer of bureaucracy. And, I mean, you know, government should not be in business as a jobs program. That's not government's function and role. And I to Mike's point, I don't think government should ever be involved in gambling. Not because it's a moral challenge, but because it's something that is actually detrimental to the people that participate in it.
So detrimental, that it's against the law for the rest of us.
Well, there you go. I mean, you can't hold a card game in your backyard or basement, you know. Why is that?
I think we ought to leave gambling on the reservation with the Indians where it belongs.
I think, you know, the gambling thing should be left to private enterprise, and I sympathize with the vets. But, you know, I don't see that gambling is the solution to the problem.
Well,
it's a temporary fix for a permanent problem.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
While we've got Mike Cunningham here, let's quickly move to the right to bear arms amendment. Mike, tell us what.
Yes.
I know that Ron Calzone spent an awful lot of time in Jefferson City. I know that this thing went from constitutional amendment to Second Amendment Preservation Act to all kinds of wheeling and dealing and going on, and almost saw its death two or three times. Tell us what went on with this.
Well, Senator Schaefer sponsored it, and he's extremely bright and a good guy, and knows what he's doing, and he's seen loopholes and wanted this to become an absolute, or not an absolute law, but to give it priority with the courts and update the Missouri Constitution. It's an update of the Missouri Constitution to go along with the recent federal laws. It updates the Missouri Constitution.
Right.
And here you see I was greatly disheartened by the Secretary of State's comments about what it did and how it was going to cost the state of Missouri to litigate and all that. And he's a Kansas City person, and I'm pretty sure he's, you know, not a gun person. And to deceive people by his description of what it does and tell people it's going to cost you money in court, state of Missouri money in court. And there again, I think that's the Attorney General's job to defend state law and the state constitution.
Isn't it funny how they complain about spending state money in court for the Second Amendment, but they have no problem on the right to farm issue?
Yeah.
Can't have it both ways, guys.
Well, I don't believe the current Attorney General is in favor of the right to farm either.
I'm just pointing out that the argument goes to, you know, the argument applies to both issues, right?
Yes.
If the state attorney general is obligated to defend, he's obligated to defend, and you can't raise it on one issue and not raise it on the other.
Right.
Yeah, but I digress.
The current attorney general has come out in favor of the right to farm, but he also wants to be governor, and my opinion is he thinks he can get votes that way.
Okay, for those of you in our listening audience who aren't familiar with this particular amendment, it is really not any. I don't want to say it's no addition to the Constitution because it adds words to the Constitution, but it doesn't add a section to the Constitution. It is a rewrite of Article 1, Section 23, which is already in the Constitution and currently reads that the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms in defense of his home, person, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of the civil power, shall not be questioned, but this shall not justify the wearing of concealed weapons. I say that's the current reading. Now, in keeping with the latest move, Missouri has statutorily now allowed the wearing of concealed weapons. So that part, but shall not include the wearing of concealed weapons, is being removed from the Constitution. So now the right to keep and bear arms and being added to this now is this clause. The right of every citizen to keep and bear arms added ammunition and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms in defense of his home, person, added now family and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of the civil power, shall not be questioned. Period. The rights guaranteed by this section shall be inalienable. Period.
That's the key word right there.
Any restriction to these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement.
Strict scrutiny is really the big thing right there.
That's important in my mind. Nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent the General Assembly from enacting general laws which limit the rights of convicted violent felons or those adjudicated by a court to be a danger to self or others as a result of mental disorder or mental infirmity. Go Mike Evans. Go Mike Slack.
Mike Evans, are you there? Okay.
Yes, I dropped out. I'm sorry. I'm here.
That's right. Now, I'll go first and be real quick. I have I've read this. I've thought about it and thought about it, and I've decided to vote in favor of it. I like the idea of strengthening the Second Amendment in case the federal government ever goes wonkier still. I also like the fact that it would take a judge, a court order, to say that a person was mentally unfit to have possession of their firearms. It could not be done by a regulatory agency or an administrative agency. They'd have to go in front of a judge. That's still a hassle. That's still not perfect. But then if they get over the impairment, they could go back in front of that judge, the way I interpret it, to get those rights restored.
Correct.
I also believe that this would give a strong legal argument on the state level for nonviolent felons who have finished their sentences to plead for restoration of gun rights within the state. According to state law, they would still be restricted by federal law. That may or may not change someday. But I am one who believes that especially nonviolent felons, when they have served their sentence, should have restoration of all rights, and if they are dangerous enough to never be allowed a firearm again, that should be a part of the original sentence. Plus, the fact that if they're that darn dangerous, it's kind of like the gangs in Kansas City that one lawmaker you were talking about, Mike Cunningham, is used to. They're the main gun problem in Kansas City, and they're not following the laws anyway. Okay, So I am in favor of this. Now, Mike Evans, your idea?
Well, the issue of strengthening Second Amendment protection, I think, is always favorable. My greatest concern is that it does, you know, it's almost contradictory, though, when it says that the rights are unalienable, and yet laws that limit that are subject to strict scrutiny. It's kind of difficult to have that phrase, you know, because it creates a system that, in my opinion, only opens the door to litigation. And I hate litigation because it's costly and it's rolling the bones. No one ever knows, you know, and we won't know for years until the litigation is resolved. So I don't generally like those kinds of clauses. Did you want to address that point, Dave?
Okay. No.
As far as the issue of the nonviolent felon, you know, those of you who know I am one, and I'm prohibited from having possession of firearms at all. Can't even have a crossbow. I don't know why, but according to the state, I can't have a crossbow. And so, and I would not be what anyone would construe to be a danger to society. I live in a modest community. I work and pay my taxes, and I live just like everybody else. You know, but there are issues that come into play with that. Now, I would agree with Mike in the sense that if someone is such a danger to our society that they should never be allowed to have a gun again, and there are those types of people, then it's one thing for a judge at the time of sentencing to order that. And if at some later time they can prove that they have rehabilitated themselves to the point where they are no longer a danger, they've changed their, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. I mean, the perfect example is a felon who might have gotten a drug charge for a bag of marijuana when he was 20 years old, is now 50. He runs his own business. He has a family, a home. He goes to church. He's a participant and a pillar in the community, but yet he can never own a firearm again. Not to mention the fact that not only can he not own a firearm, but no one in his home can own a firearm because they can't have a firearm in a premise which he lives in. Not to mention, I might add, one of my pet peeves is the state of Missouri bars all felons for running from any office. So even if I wanted to run for city council, or this hypothetical citizen wanted to run for city council or mayor or school board or county sheriff, not county sheriff because you can't be in law enforcement, but whatever. The point is, you can't, you know, a felony is a lifelong sentence, irrespective. And I believe that the issue surrounding firearms is a prohibition that is unconscionable and unnecessary. If you've done something so dangerous and present such a danger to society, then let a court specifically state that is part of your sentence, that you are barred from owning a firearm until you can prove that you have, you know, you're no longer in that position.
Mike Cunningham.
Yes. The strict scrutiny is one of the most important parts of that, and that takes a lot of the judge's personal feelings or his interpretation out of it. He's got to do it by strict scrutiny, and that's probably a major thing. Instead of just say, well, maybe, there's no maybes about it. This comes under strict scrutiny, and I think that's a major part of it. And it needed to be updated, and like, say, removing that language that said you couldn't carry a concealed weapon. It needed to be updated. So it's a great law. I really like Senator Schaefer that came forward with it. Great attorney. He's the attorney that the person was executed the other day, if you believe in the death penalty. That was his first death penalty case, was against that guy, and he got the death penalty. And finally, however many years later, he was killed. And Senator Schaefer's got a good head on his shoulders. I enjoy serving with him.
Mike, okay. Mike Cunningham, in your opinion, does this place a felon like, and I'm using my own example or my own self as an example, does this allow me to say that state law supersedes federal law?
I think
What's your opinion on that?
My opinion is it's raining so hard I can't see where it's going. I don't know, Mike. That's a legal question, and I'm not in a position to answer that.
I see.
Sure.
I'm not trying
to put you on the spot. I guess I was just curious.
No, I know you're not,
but
I just have to tell you the truth that I cannot answer that because I don't really know. You know,
I say yes.
I would think yes, it does give you the opportunity to go to court. And then
right. That
judge should do that under strict scrutiny. So then that should give you a whole lot more than what you've got right now.
Right.
I don't know how many people have contacted me, you know, they did something wrong that they're 18 or 19, convicted felons, and they want to take their kid hunting and cannot do so, and I don't like that. I think, you know,
sure.
I fought for that, tried to get expunged from their records, et cetera, like that. They're good people, good citizens, married kids and all that now. So I fought for that ability to do that. So
right.
I would hope
well,
that
you know,
would be the case.
There is actually federal law that says that, you know, the federal government has to review you, too. The problem is that the Congress won't fund it, and the ATF doesn't want the funding. They reject it every time it's brought up, because then they can say, well, we don't have the funding to go back and review everybody, which is kind of
right.
a dirty trick. It's really a, you know, it's a false way to deny people, you know. But even if the state, you know, even if state law would allow you to, in some cases, federal law doesn't. So, you know, it's kind of like a, if your state says you can, then why would the federal government say you can't? You know, you're almost obligated to, or you're, no matter what you do, you're wrong, you know.
I'll tell you, the rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Any restriction to these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. I say yes. I say that's pretty clear, Mike Evans. I say yes, the state of Missouri goes to bat for you when the federal government comes in and tries at this point to restrict you. You are not a convicted violent felon or adjudicated by a court to be a danger to yourself or others as a result of a mental disorder. Now, you may well be adjudicated by a lot of us as a danger to yourself, but...
Wow.
I didn't say that, Mike.
Just
no,
teasing
I heard you, Mike.
Just teasing you, Mike. You know that.
I know you are. I would say to you that my take on it is that I don't want to be the test case. I can tell you that.
And again, I see this exactly the same way I see Amendment 1, and that is kind of as a backdoor. As a backdoor nullification bill. I see litigation coming, Mike Evans. I know you hate litigation. I see litigation coming in both cases, and I welcome it. I welcome a chance for our state to take their place at the table, finally, and stand up and say, along with some other states that are doing this, listen, federal government, it's time for you to get back in your box. I welcome the Supreme Court taking this on a state-by-state, and I am hoping that things like this keep the steam building for enough states to get together, and we'll have a convention of the states, and we'll eventually get this thing under control once and for all.
Well, I would tend to agree with you on that. And when I say I hate litigation, let me quantify when I say I hate litigation what I mean. I don't generally have a problem with litigation when government sues government. In other words, for the state attorney
yeah.
general to sue the federal government, that I don't have a problem with. I understand it costs us money, but it's a different format than going out and having a farmer have to sue the DNR or an individual have to sue some administrative agency or the milk board to be able to operate their business. Because we are beaten by financial attrition. Why? Because we don't have unlimited resources.
See,
the Attorney General's offices have endless attorneys sitting there who are either writing briefs or twiddling their thumbs.
See,
or maybe
Mike,
watching porn on our dime.
I don't sue the DNR. I keep collecting rainwater until the DNR comes after me, and then I go to the state and I say, look, I got this Constitution in my hand. You come to my defense now.
Well, what well, I do is I call Mike Cunningham and say, how can we take care of these guys?
Yeah.
I sure wish that they had put that language in, that's in this bill, that the state is obligated to protect those rights, into the first the Amendment 1 language then.
Because, I don't have an argument.
I would have been happy with that as opposed to the, you know, shall not be infringed. Something along the line that says every family farm can't be required to have to actually sell the farm to actually protect their right to run it.
Well, I don't have an argument with you there, Mike. That's for sure. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not the hardcore I think you think I am. But I do want to see common sense stuff. And what we never see from government is anything generally that you know, you can't use common sense and legislation in the same sentence often, because it's you know, it doesn't generally exist. This particular bill and the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which twice now we've tried to get passed, quite frankly, should have worked together as two bills that dovetailed together to give us an impenetrable wall that would have given us the ability to defend our rights in our state against any encroachment by the federal government, period. And frankly, while I'm for this bill, my biggest concern is that without the Second Amendment Preservation Act being passed as well, that it doesn't quite have all of the same strength as it would have had the two been passed in conjunction, if you follow my point.
I do follow your point. We've got 10 minutes left. I want to hear Mike Cunningham tell us what the legislature was thinking and talking about when they wrote this amendment to Article 1, Section 15. Mike.
Which amendment? I'm sorry, I missed you there.
One on electronic communications and data, which is again, just a change in wording to an existing article in the Constitution.
Yeah. It honestly didn't, I forgot even who carried the bill now. We're just, you know, we're all tired of being spied on and followed, et cetera, like that. Even some of that goes back to Common Core and why we threw such a, fit about Common Core. You know, and what the government is collecting and what they're using, et cetera, like that.
Mike Evans, go. Mike Evans?
I'm here.
Mike
Cunningham, I'm not quite sure that was the purpose behind this. I think it was more geared towards what's going on in the federal government with the NSA. Am I not correct in that assumption? Did we lose Mike?
We might have.
He's probably in a bad spot. I want to just mention I am in favor of this bill. Anything that adds more privacy, I think, is good. And, again, if the federal government, which currently does at least say by the Supreme Court ruling they're protecting these rights, if they ever got wonky, again, the Supreme Court changes their mind, at least we'd have a state level of protection. And full disclosure, I served in Army intelligence working directly for the NSA in the 70s and 80s. But what the NSA is doing today, I would have gone to prison for 10 years for doing. We were strictly forbidden from any internal surveillance.
That's right.
That's against the charter. It's not what the NSA is there for. We were there to listen to the enemy, to other countries, not to Americans. And every former NSA employee I know believes when NSA turns inward on Americans, they're wrong. They should be prosecuted.
Yep.
They're there to turn outward on foreign countries.
Mike Cunningham, are you back? Okay. So my take on it is, and I agree with you, Mike, I think it's good because it lends another layer, if you will, of protection for us. What I'd like to see, And it would have been nice if this bill could be or could be construed or used as a definer to say, or as a qualifier to say, that the state of Missouri will fight the federal government on behalf of the citizens to say the NSA cannot operate here.
Yeah.
I would like that.
Mm-hmm. What?
I would like that, the state protecting us from the feds.
Right. Essentially, the same thing that we just talked about in the gun bill, right, should be that the state should be defending us and standing as the as the mediator between us and the bully, if you will, of the federal government. We need a big brother. That's what state government's supposed to do. And so I would like to have seen the language that was in the gun bill about how the attorney general will have to defend the citizen against you know, the unalienable or abuse of that unalienable right. The same kind of language applied to this issue of the Fourth Amendment and privacy, because let's be candid,
and
this is out of control. I'm sorry, Dave?
And Amendment 1.
And Amendment 1, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Look, we're out of time tonight. Mike Evans, thanks for calling. Mike Cunningham has dropped off. I want to tell you, Mike, I enjoyed it. You come back anytime.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, thank you for coming. It's been great. It's our honor to have you here. I recognize your standing in the talk radio community, and I'm honored to have you come along. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike Evans will be one of the speakers at the Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16 and 17 in Springfield, and preppersandpatriots.net. If anyone wants to check
that. I am looking forward to that, Mike. That's going to be a great opportunity to speak to some of these folks and to take questions from the audience about it. So I'm excited about it.
We'll see you there, Mike.
That's great. Thanks so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful night.
You too, sir.
Take
Good
care.
Night. All right, Mike. What a show. We're going to come back and revisit these all again tomorrow night. One more time before Tuesday's election. You folks out there listening, go out and vote on Tuesday. Vote educate. That's what we're here for. We hear about this thing where only 25% of the registered voters are going out to vote, and we wring our hands. And I don't know that I'm unhappy about that, Mike. I think that in any primary election, you actually get the educated voters.
I do too, but then I'm one of those dinosaurs who doesn't like the motor voter or,
oh, yeah.
You know, I think even registering to vote should be a little bit of a hassle, because
yeah.
Then the people that really care do it, not
right. No.
not the sheep.
Right.
And
But as a general rule, I mean, unless there's a historical person running for president, those people don't go vote anyway. I mean, they register when they get. I mean, we're seeing that right now. You know, the people who sleep from election to election, they're not coming out Tuesday. You know, they're going to come out when there's some big national thing going on, and either the first woman is running for president, or the first Hispanic is running for president, or you know, or something great and big is going on, or Claire McCaskill's running against some guy who said sometimes rape is legitimate, and you know, national news kind of stuff they hear about on the TV. I'm all for people getting educated before they go to vote, and that, Mike, is what we're doing here, I think.
Exactly. And it was a good show tonight.
I like the discussion. I like Mike. I like Mike and Mike.
And one, you know, Mike Evans is a great guy. And one thing about Mike Cunningham, too, he's my senator, and I've had people tell me that they've tried to contact their senator or their representative, and they can't reach them. They don't respond to letters. If I call Mike Cunningham and leave a voicemail, within 24 hours at the latest, he calls back.
Oh, yeah.
And my rep, it might take him 3 or 4 days. He's a little slower, but he always gets back with me. But Mike Cunningham, usually the same day.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
I think that's an example.
I like
he's setting
that.
Up for the rest
I'm,
of them.
I'm blessed with a representative of that same caliber down here in Springfield, Eric Burleson. I know right next door we have a representative, Mike Moon, who's of the same tenure. After Mike Moon gets elected, we have him along every Friday night during the session, where he gives us a front lines rundown of what's going on that week in the House of Representatives and how things are moving. So our listeners weren't taken by surprise by any of these amendments. We knew they were coming because we've been following them all the way along. So there we go. We've talked about the right to farm. We've talked about the right to keep and bear arms. We've talked about the lottery ticket. We've talked about the MoDOT tax, and we've talked about the eavesdropping. And we're going to revisit those again tomorrow night. There are some people who will, we'll make some new points. We'll maybe have different people on tomorrow night. I'd really like to get, I feel kind of overwhelmed here. I'd really like to get, and I might make a couple of phone calls tomorrow, at least one other person besides myself here who thinks Amendment 1 is a good idea.
There are quite a few on the Missouri Grassroots Facebook page. You could find some there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dwayne Lester will join us tomorrow night, and I have no idea what his opinion is. We've never talked about it.
All right.
Dwayne is editor-publisher of the Missouri Torch. Okay.
No, I think I have actually read his opinion on it. I'm not ready to stick my I think so. I'm not ready to stick my neck out yet, though, and say I follow the Torch quite closely, and I believe I have read that, but I'm just not certain enough to say so. Okay, in the 5 minutes left, Mike, get in a plug for 2 weeks from tomorrow.
The Preppers and Patriots Expo at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Springfield, August 16 and 17, 2 weeks from tomorrow and 2 weeks from Sunday. We'll have probably about 30 speakers, including Mike Evans. Ike Skelton and Doreen Hannes were on with us last week. They'll be speaking. Joyce Riley, Beth Ann Schwerenberg from Common Sense Coalition Radio. All kinds of people involved in preparedness, self-reliance, survival medicine. It's $10 admission. That's for the entire weekend. I think we have 4 vendor tables still available. If anyone out there is wanting to be a vendor, just give me a call. Go to the website. You'll see my number. Or call 417-264-2435. And it's been a couple of years since they had a preparedness expo in Springfield. I think we're going to have a really good turnout. We've got people coming from several surrounding states and Texas, and Doc Bones and Nurse Amy, who are really well known, are coming from Miami, Florida, to talk to us about survival medicine. So, hope we see everybody there.
Cool. What's a vendor table cost for those who are interested?
Vendor table is $300, and that is actually pretty low for this type of event. And
it's nothing. Yeah.
And the vendor table fees actually go towards advertising to get more people to walk in the door and see what they're selling at their vendor table.
Cool. Okay. Looking forward to seeing you there. Go ahead.
I just got a call today, by the way. The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund will be there with us. Great organization.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good, yeah. I would have liked, now, as much as I do like Amendment 1, I would have liked to have seen some of that rolled into this thing. And we'll keep pushing here on this show and with our favorite legislators in Jefferson City for that to become a reality. I would like to see almost unalienable level protections given to farmers in the farmer-to-consumer arena.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Paul Kirkman is another rep who is actually for Amendment 1.
Right.
But he's a Tea Party guy. He's very liberty-minded conservative, and he's actually for labeling of GMOs.
Yes. So am I. I mean, I'm for Amendment 1, and I'm at every I'm at the March Against Monsanto meetings. I'm a follower of the March Against Monsanto. I oppose Monsanto at almost every turn. I oppose any business, whether it be agriculture or not, that gets so cozy with my government. I oppose a lot of the things that Monsanto does. I don't have any objection at all to let's don't go there. I'm a libertarian, so as you know, I object to any federal federal regulation to label anything. I object to the federal government labeling cigarettes and labeling liquor. I don't believe it's certainly not a Article 1, Section 8 function of the federal government. But for goodness sakes, Mike, we do label cigarettes and we do label candy and we do label lyrics by federal edict. So what the hell? If we're gonna go there, why don't we tell people that they're eating Roundup?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm all for that. Well, anyway, and you were outnumbered tonight. Three mics
versus one Dave, and that's all right. I can stand my ground. Mike, thanks. Again, I'll talk to you tomorrow night. I love having you here. We'll do this thing together tomorrow and every Friday and Saturday for as long as we draw breath. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll be talking to some of you tomorrow night. Some of you will go party tomorrow night instead. I'm going out tomorrow to work with Mike Moon. I know that Mike Slack will be working hard on keeping the expo going, and he'll be here tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with you and with me. God bless you. Good night.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if you're